All right, welcome into the Fan pregame 90-minute show. Justin and Ailish here for Wednesday night hockey in about an hour. Leafs and Capitals on the network after us with a 7:30 puck drop, so we'll shift over to 590 after that. Wild and Kings at 10 p.m. for the late game, and Carolyn Cameron will join us, the host of Wednesday night hockey, in just a few minutes.
Yeah, we'll continue with the Leafs. Leafs pulse check with a notable Leafs alumnus, Wendell Clark, ever heard of him. 6:30, he'll join us, talk about the state of the Leafs and what to make of the final month or so of the season.
Our pregame show will continue at 7 on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Of course, we're going to talk Ovi and Matthews, a big playoff push for the Capitals tonight. And these two goal scorers going head-to-head, we have some stats. Justin put together a chart, so he was cooking up content pre-show.
The chart may not yield anything of note. And it's record-setting PWHL. Like, it is every week, it seems. Mm-hmm. But it could be Toronto setting records and, of course, attendance records with the Bell Center selling out under 30 minutes for a game on April 20th. I know you'll be there.
I got tickets before they were
sold
out. I was lucky.
And we'll do some best bets as well.
There's going to be lots to come. But let's not make Carolyn wait any longer. Carolyn Cameron, host of Wednesday Night Hockey, joins us. Carolyn, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Well, we're excited. I want to say congrats. I know you have exciting news to share. I won't say it for you, but
I am with child.
You are with child. I just want to make sure. It's so exciting. I'm really excited for you. How are you feeling?
Good. Yeah, I'm feeling good. My husband and I are very excited. Due this July, so yeah, it's pretty surreal. It's nice to say it publicly. Mm-hmm. It's been kind of showing a little bit on air, thanks to Deborah Berman, though, our wardrobe stylist, for all the stretchy pants.
But, oh, that's great.
Yeah, I'm feeling good, just a little tired. Hopefully, I think they call it, like, baby brain a little bit. I might be a little slower on the uptake these days, but maybe I'm just excusing being slow on the uptake on
you
the baby.
You can use any excuses you want as a July baby. You know, it's fun to be born in the summer, but you don't get to, like, decorate your locker at school. So that's the only downfall.
True.
But you get a summer birthday when everyone's free.
I know. That's pretty nice. I have a March birthday, and look at it outside.
It's
brutal.
It was snowing when we came.
Yeah. Not great out there.
No. Let's talk Canadian teams to start things off. Obviously, we got a big one with the Leafs and the Capitals tonight. But the big conversation we have all year long when we look at the Stanley Cup is the Canadian Cup drought. But for me and Justin, I think we're feeling a little bit more confident that could be closer to coming to an end. How are you feeling about our Canadian Cup drought?
I agree. So start of the season, like a lot of us, I think, I had the Edmonton Oilers, and then they went on that absolutely terrible run. Mm-hmm. And now I think, I don't have the standings right in front of me, I think they're 8 back of the Canucks, mm-hmm. and they have two or three games in hand. So now with the Oilers, I still stand by that pick. And I think now the question is, oh my gosh, can they finish not only first in the division, but first in the West? Mm-hmm. And then the Winnipeg Jets are just a team that's made for the playoffs, and now they finally have the scoring. So they're a shutdown team. They don't allow many goals on average. And again, now they've picked up the offense. And I heard you guys talking about it yesterday on the show. The key there is you just have to win the Central. Because the Avs are second in the Central now, and they've won 7 in a row, which is pretty astounding that the Jets are top spot in that division. But I feel really good about the Jets if they finish top spot in that division.
And they've done something that they don't normally do, which is get aggressive at the deadline, right?
Yeah.
They spent a decent amount, at least for them, and brought in Tyler Toffoli and Sean Monahan. Do you think that changes? Like, is, you know, we obviously go through the deadline and rate all these moves, et cetera, et cetera. These are kind of understated, but maybe more bang for their buck with Toffoli and Monahan.
Totally. And Monahan, I think Sheveldayoff getting him early too, I think was pretty key in getting him in the fold and getting comfortable. I thought those were two great pickups. And on deadline day, which wasn't quiet per se, but it wasn't really the day of blockbusters we were hoping for, I thought Toffoli was the best pickup. Like, you have a guy coming from Jersey who is their leading scorer. He's a playoff performer. He's a Stanley Cup champ. And now you have him in the fold. But I think too, for Sheveldayoff, it was even just early on in the season kind of surprising everyone and getting Scheifele and Hellebuyck locked up long term. There just felt in Winnipeg like last offseason there were the question marks of still who's going to want to be here, what are we going to be, and then when you lock up those two franchise cornerstones, then you've kind of got the runway of, okay, what else can we add and how good can we be?
Let's go back to Edmonton for a second, because they were your preseason pick, like a lot of people in this building.
Half of Sportsnet.
Half
and then
of
we were
Sportsnet.
All like, oh,
we weren't
no.
asked, though, so we didn't get to give our stuff.
And we
it's
probably would have been wrong,
or at least
I would have been wrong.
Don't check
well.
My other picks. They're probably, for it. The coach for Jack Adams has probably been fired.
Well, a lot of them were fired early on.
Yeah, it hasn't been great for coaches, but it's been pretty good for Edmonton of late. clearly bouncing back after that really difficult start. But we talk about like building a team and doing what some teams did at the deadline. For Edmonton, it's been kind of like a years-long process of having enough behind McDavid and Drysdale, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's been this, hey, can we just bring in, accumulate. And I guess the final moves might have been this Henrik move,
yeah.
in to a certain extent. So do they have enough with their three additions at their deadline and with what they've done previously to make you feel even more confident about a pick that wasn't looking so good for a bit?
I think so in terms of answering the question, do they have enough depth behind McDavid and Draisaitl? I think they do now.
Mm-hmm.
But then, not to be a Debbie Downer, even though I still said they're my pick, is I still worry about goaltending.
Right.
And it's more so that Skinner plays so often. And if anything were to happen to him or anything were to fall off his play at the start of the playoffs or late in the season, sure, they've got Pickard, but there's just not the trust there that mm-hmm. perhaps he can bring them all the way through. But in terms of depth of scoring, you look at what Hyman's doing and you look at even Fogel, and we were teasing last week, I guess, when Connor Brown finally scored mm-hmm. his first as an Oiler.
They threw their hats on.
Yeah. Yeah. Is even if he could get going, that would be like a late season mm-hmm. pickup mm-hmm. in a way, an addition. So I do think they have enough there, but I still worry a little bit about the goaltending.
They got a lot of forward depth when they can actually contribute. But Hyman's season has been unbelievable. We've talked about that week in week. It's just, it's like exciting to watch as a guy that we like, Zach Hyman.
But yeah.
You miss him in the blue and white.
It's also on him too. Like, I think a lot of people think it's because of the guys he's playing around, but so many of his goals are just him going hard.
Yeah, he works so hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're lucky. Leafs are going to play Oilers on Saturday night. That's going to be a great one for Hockey Night in Canada. But we're kind of contrasting teams going in different directions. Leafs are in a bit of like a stable spot right now. They don't have so much to play for. They're pretty much in the playoffs. They're pretty much going to play one of two opponents. And then you look at other teams that are like fighting tooth and nail to get in, like Florida did last year. They barely made it in and then they went for this big run. Do you worry about teams that have the next month and a half of pretty much, let's just be healthy, let's just have good habits and see what happens? Like, do you find that the playoff momentum really shows in that first round?
Yeah, that's actually going to be kind of our main theme, not to give it away on Hockey Central for the pregame tonight.
We stole your notes.
Because and that's what makes this matchup interesting. Sure, it's second game of a back-to-back for the Leafs, but against the Capitals, who are just pushing and playing playoff hockey right now, even though it might not be the best hockey to try and get in. I am concerned with the Leafs in that sense, is it's the question of what are you playing for? But then in the other breath, I think if you look with Marner out, with Yarncroke out, it actually gives the opportunity for Keefe to figure out, okay, who else do I have and what do I got here? But they need to solidify those lines, I think, pretty soon. So I think that's what you're playing for, number one. And then with Wall likely getting the start tonight, I think it's also who is your number one goaltender. Mm-hmm. And Samsonov's had four straight starts, but then he wasn't good last night. And Keefe made that publicly known along with everyone else who he said wasn't good enough. He didn't like anybody. So I think the Leafs probably hoped Wall would take it and run with it in those two games against Boston, his last starts. But he let in 8 goals over 2 games. So figuring out your lines, figuring out your goaltender, I think those are the two priorities, because I think you do need to have a focus mm-hmm. when you aren't really concerned too much. You're not going to move ahead of the Panthers at this point. They're 9 back. I am a little worried about Tampa breathing down their neck, because mm-hmm. Tampa's won 4 in a row, so they're creeping up. But yeah, I think it's kind of, you don't have to look at the standings. You just have to, from within, focus and say, okay, what are we playing for? Mm-hmm. And what do we kind of have to check off the to-do list before April 22nd or whatever it is?
I think it might be especially difficult for the Maple Leafs because it is the same story over like year after year,
I know.
Right? Like, because they've been in this spot where they know exactly where they are, likely who they're going to play, and it's really difficult to find that motivational element. I do think Vancouver is sort of in a similar position where they're probably going to win the Pacific Division. The Edmonton Oilers could catch them, but I feel like it's a little less drastic because it's still the first year of Rick Tocchet, right?
Yeah.
And Rick Tocchet's making his mark and his stamp on the team, and everyone's still trying to play for Rick Tocchet. It's like, okay, Keefe's done the thing year over year where, yeah, you're trying to figure out combinations, but Tocchet, you're still trying to, like, endear yourself to a new head coach there who does conduct things differently. So do you think, like, the lack of race for Vancouver will be less of a problem than it is in Toronto?
I think so, and even I lived in Vancouver for a couple of years working there, and even just knowing what the excitement would be like with them getting back in the playoffs and being a cup contender, I think that would probably pull them along a long way. Whereas you said with Toronto, it's the same old like hurry up and wait.
Yeah, the star tissue's not there, right?
No, and even actually, like going back to Toronto too, I was thinking, is it helpful now? And maybe I'm just grasping at straws. Is it helpful that they're not worried about home ice advantage? Do you know what I mean? Like maybe home ice hasn't worked, so just be happy where you.
Yeah, they haven't had it previously though, as well,
that's
right?
True.
Like they've kind of gone back and forth, whether they're locked into second or locked into third.
But no,
it just doesn't feel like having no incentive down the stretch is a good thing.
No, I agree. But Vancouver, it doesn't worry me as much. Not that it worries me about the Leafs, but I don't think for Vancouver, because this season is so fresh, because it's so new, and because of how exciting it is in the city, it doesn't concern me as much.
So you guys will be teeing up Wednesday Night Hockey, of course, 7:30 with Toronto and Washington. The beginning of the season for Ovi looked like he's never catching Gretzky.
Yeah.
Looking at washed Ovi, but he has turned it on in the last a couple games. 13 goals in his last 21 games.
Yeah.
I don't know if he just needed to have like a little bit of a rest period, but this guy looks like he's back hunting down that goal record. You've got Austin Matthews on the other side. This is like the battle of two great goal scorers tonight.
Isn't it awesome? I don't know. I could be giving away because Ailish teased you have, like, you did some research. Is it the Matthews at this point in his career?
It's not quite, but it's pretty similar.
Okay.
You can take it. Don't worry.
Because I feel like no one's fully jumped on this yet because it is a little ridiculously early. Mm-hmm. But if you compare Ovi and Matthews in their career, Matthews is ahead of Ovi in terms of goal scoring pace than Ovi was at this point in his career. I'm really excited for tonight because, yeah, it's like Matthews chased for 70 and he slowed down a little bit. Ovi's chased for Gretzky, which earlier this season I totally tapped out on it. I thought it's not going to happen.
It was like embarrassing.
Yeah, it was.
The first
David
time
Amber
they played.
Lives for this.
Oh,
like,
does he?
Oh my gosh. This is like his pride and joy is Ovi's going to get to Gretzky. So he must be really happy if he's watching right now. And then, yeah, I think it's also so interesting because it's also Ovi pushing right now for a playoff spot. And they missed it last year and they'd had 8 straight seasons in the playoffs. So I think I'm excited. We better see something from Matthews and Ovi tonight.
I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, but I guess it's teasing what I did look up. And that's just, you know, the dominance compared to the field. Like when Ovechkin was at his best, first 8 years of Ovechkin, again, this is sort of anecdotal a little bit because I do have the numbers, but you don't have the numbers yet. Like, did you feel like Ovechkin was more dominant versus the field than Matthews is or has been in his first 8 years?
Ooh, that's a good question. I guess you could say yes, because if you even look at last season for Matthews, maybe that's just recency bias and what we saw last season. It was off pace, and you have McDavid right there. Not that he's as known as the goal scorer, but you've got Draisaitl. So I'm thinking out loud right now.
That's kind of the difference. I'll kind of let you into it. Where it's like Matthews,
write this down.
Matthews does have more compared, at least per game, right?
Yeah.
But it's a different game now because Ovechkin in his first 8 years, he had only one player within 90 goals of him when you looked at those 8 years combined. With Matthews, there's 5 players within 90 goals. And you mentioned McDavid and Draisaitl. Like, there are just more elite goal scorers. When it was Ovechkin at his prime, he was kind of the only one doing it. And that's why it feels like, at least for me, that Ovechkin's like run of dominance was, there was more of a stark contrast because he was so much better than everybody else. Now goal scoring, like there's tons of 30 goal scorers. Back then, there was pretty much no one scoring and certainly no one scoring at Ovechkin's.
You know what I was even just trying? I can't remember, but do you remember like earlier this season, there was a stretch where you just felt every time Matthews had the puck, he was going to score and he was going to score at least one a game. I don't remember with Ovechkin. It must have been like that where it felt like, I'm sure like during the power play, on the power play, you always think and thought he was going to score, but I don't know if there was that feeling.
The thing for me that I remember this feeling as well is Matthews was scoring from everywhere, from everywhere, like every type of shot, every type of play behind the goal line. He'd find a way. Like it was unbelievable. His scoring, I guess, like variety.
Yeah.
And Ovi, you just knew when he's in his kitchen, he's scoring on the
literally
power play.
Just standing.
So it's kind of, it's like choose your fighter, right? You can want one that can score lights out in the same spot, one that can score so creatively with Matthews. I think that's where I've seen the game grow a little bit more when we talk about like Ovi playing. Ovi also felt like a star because it was Ovi and Sid. And it was like these two faces, and they kind of brought, remember he said they saved the NHL? I forget the exact wording.
He did say that.
He said they saved the NHL. So maybe we were so hyper-fixated on these two stars saving the NHL. And now, you know, everyone's scoring 30 goals.
I just think it's like another checkpoint in how much better the game is now.
Yeah.
Because, they kind of did save the NHL in a lot of ways because these two guys came in and they were such mega superstars doing things that other players who had been in the league for a while weren't doing. But now I just think we're in a better place where, yeah, you can mention, oh, you know, the best playmaker in the game is Connor McDavid, who's maybe going to get 100 assists this year while Matthews chases 70 goals. Like, we weren't talking about any of that. We were talking about, you know, 100 points for a couple guys max. And that's just not the way the NHL operates anymore.
And you have Sam Reinhart and Zach Hyman, like, right up
yeah.
there.
And guys
I don't want to
like
say randomly, but it's
it
like,
yeah.
you know. They're outlier
seasons for guys that weren't supposed to be ever yeah. in that category. Now I think it's just more possible.
Carolyn, I know we have to let you go because you got to go regurgitate these things to our audience at 7. We definitely appreciate you having you on, especially when, you know, you've got other things that are more important in your life. So we appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. Yes. Preston Ailish, good to see you.
We'll talk to you soon.
Have fun with Wendell Clark.
Oh, we will.
I was jealous when I heard
He's
that.
Very
I'm
sweet.
Like, oh,
we're
yeah,
excited.
No kidding.
We'll be on. You can listen to us while you're getting ready.
I will. Perfect. It's always on the makeup.
There you go. Very sweet. Thanks, Carolyn. Appreciate it. We'll talk soon. That's Carolyn Cameron, host of Wednesday Night Hockey, ahead of Leafs and Capitals tonight, 7:30. We'll be up, as I said, for the full hour. Then we'll shift to Sportsnet 590, The Fan, to do our own Leafs pregame show. And we'll have Wendell Clark join us at 6:30, and that will be up on Sportsnet. So lots of exciting, lots of Leafs talk tonight. But let's circle back on that Ovi Matthews and just give a bit more context, because that's basically the big draw tonight. The Caps are in a really intense playoff hunt. That's awesome, but kind of surprising because they have horrible goals differential, and they've been having a lot of issue just like finding consistency. But Ovi's found consistency, and boom, we found consistency as a Capitals team. That's and Spencer Carberry, who was obviously used to be with the Leafs, is leading the way there. So tonight, a bunch of big storylines.
Yeah, and you know, part of the story for the Capitals certainly is that this is a team that was moving out assets. Like Joel Edmondson's going to be playing for the Maple Leafs tonight, and was obviously once a member of the Washington Capitals, who also traded Anthony Mantha. Like, they're not interested in playing for the Stanley Cup per se, but they are likely going to the playoffs or in a good position to make the playoffs, given that, hey, they've found a way to win games with a different sort of formula, but also the Eastern Conference isn't very good, especially in the middle, like maybe top heavy and maybe not even as top heavy, well, not really at all, as the Western Conference. So it's kind of an anomaly, but it's also a credit to what they're doing there, like winning hockey games, especially when you have the sort of talent that's going to give you a negative goal differential like they have. Like, it means something is working right, and that they've adjusted themselves to maybe play lower scoring games or thrive in tightly contested games. And I think you got to look at the likes of Spencer Carberry, the other players on that team that maybe have adjusted their game. And I can say Alexander Ovechkin, has adjusted his game, because I think we know what he's going for, and that's to try and break this goals record.
But he adjusted it from part one of the season to part two.
He's come on a little bit. It's
a
not
little
like he's
bit.
Scoring,
he,
I mean, 13 and what,
he
say 23?
He had eight goals in his first 43 games.
Basically, that's a passable pace to get to this without
eight
it being an issue.
Eight goals in 43 games when you're Alexander Ovechkin is not passable.
Yeah, it was going to be painstaking. That's what I mean, getting
he wasn't
to the record.
Get it.
Now it's not going to be painstaking if he stays
in his
at
past
what
21
he's at.
Games,
but still, that's like, okay, that's Ovechkin. That's a decent goal scorer in the NHL right now. But this team is not just Ovechkin scoring. They're finding ways to win low-scoring hockey games. And again, got to get to Carberry, who's with very little, getting results out of this team. And for that, I mean, the former Maple Leafs assistant deserves some credit.
Sure, tonight there'll be some money on the board. I thought it was interesting. So Ovi was asked about Matthews today on NHL.com, had an article written up about his thoughts on the young goal scorer, and his pace right now, Matthews, is 67 goals. At one point, he was 70-something plus. We were talking 70 was a lock, 75. He's on pace right now for 67 goals. Ovi said the following about Austin Matthews, quote, "It's great. I'm happy for him. Hope he gets it. Maybe 70. You never know. He's a special player. It's fun to watch. I'm cheering for him. The fans are going to like when he gets to 70. So the reason, like, this, obviously Ovi's got his own goal scoring chase on, but Austin Matthews would be on track to become the first to score 65 since Ovechkin hit his NHL career high with 65 goals in 07-08. So they're parallels. Once again, if Matthews gets to 65, he's doing it. The last person that did it was Ovi. Like, they're really intertwined in terms of their goal scoring production. When you put up the stats head to head, like, it's pretty outstanding what Austin Matthews has done so far. And we're calling Ovi, you know, maybe the guy that's going to beat Wayne Gretzky. Well, you know, when do we start thinking that Matthews could be on a similar trajectory?
Yeah, he very well could. And I don't know how history will, like, you know, demonstrate it, show it, what it'll mean. Like, if Matthews flirts with the record, clearly we're going to be talking about him in the same breath. But again, as we were talking about with Carolyn, it is a different game because there's just more goal scoring. There are more high-end goal scorers. for him to score 65 goals, I think 3 years into his NHL career in 2007, 2008, I mean, what did he win the goal title by? 20?
Like
65 goals then, I don't know, maybe that's 75 now if we're doing era adjusted, and that's kind of just a loose guess, but Ovechkin's heights are going to be compared to everyone's heights because he is and in line to be the greatest goal scorer of all time. But the fact that Matthews is ahead at this point and could very well stay ahead because, I mean, he's not even reached the prime, has he? Like, maybe just getting into it? Like, we could be talking about the two greatest goal scorers ever on the ice tonight and something of a passing of a torch.
So Ovi only needs, I believe it's 52 at this point, to pass Wayne Gretzky. The beginning of the season, the tale of two Ovis, he was averaging a career low 0.33 goals per game. Now he's picked it up. If you were to use the pace he's used for the beginning of the season, he would have needed 159 games more to pass Wayne Gretzky. So that's 62 games into the 2025-26 season. And, you know, how old is Ovi? Is he going to be cooking at that rate in two more years? Hard to say. But using this pace right now over the last 21 games, he only needs 84 more games, which would be 69 games into 24-25, which means he would do it next year.
You said 52, right, that he needs?
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to get there, I think, regardless.
Unless something catastrophic happens, he will will himself.
It just,
with the gray hair and a beard.
I only think the question was, like, how ugly does it get? Mm-hmm. Like, how bad is Washington? And how rough are the, you know, the games between goals for Ovechkin as he stumbles to the finish line? But with him heating up here, it's kind of avoided that, or at least put that aside. Every goal obviously counts because it gets harder as you get older. But him going on this little run, I do think it's going to make it a little bit more palatable for Washington fans. And the fact that they're stiff in the playoffs and might very well get there and clearly are seeing some really good things from their new coach and some of the younger players on the roster, like, it has to be encouraging because, frankly, 3 or 4 months ago, I was really concerned about how sad it was going to get in Washington. Now, with them in playoff hunt and Ovechkin scoring again, like, there are no such worries.
Well, I even thought about how hard is it for the organization to make that decision to wait to really tear down around. I mean, they did sell a bit, but they didn't really decide a full-on direction. Now they're in that mushy middle, which is being profitable if they can get some playoff games. But how long does it take to get Ovi to that goal record and put your future on hold, right? And it might not have to be at that case. They might think that maybe next year we can add a couple things at the at free agency. We might actually have a team get Ovi closer to this goal record next year, right? So it is interesting how that just changes the whole trajectory around the Washington Capitals, because obviously they're going to do anything they can to get him there.
And because we always compare Ovechkin to Sidney Crosby, we were comparing, like, okay, what's the upshot with what's left? Like, how gracefully are these careers going to end? And there was a lot of worry, as we just talked about, with Ovechkin. And I guess there was some hope for Crosby, Dubas coming in. They're spending money. They're making moves. They're getting Norris Trophy defensemen in to support it. And which position would you rather be in right now? I mean, one team has a playoff shot. That's Washington. One team is looking like it can't decide how it's going to conduct business, whether they're going to buy or sell, support, not support the core in Pittsburgh. At least with Washington, I think they've found this balance here where it's, okay, we're going to support this team and this group, but we're also going to look to the future. And they're, at least to this point, at least this season, have done it a little bit more effectively, which I never would have thought, again, before the season or let alone 2 or 3 months ago.
Like, when Kyle Dubas went to Pittsburgh and started to do his offseason business, and it was pretty dramatic in a sense, I wish we could go back and predict, like, where people thought the Penguins would end up, or if you cross-reference Sid and Ovi, who'd be happier? Because I really don't think many people would have picked this pathway for the Penguins to be this dramatic this early and have Dubas walk into a situation which wasn't really maybe the most desirable. It was a pretty tough spot to be in. Come from the Maple Leafs, go to the Penguins, and you have to make some big decisions around one of the legends of the game. I mean, yeah, I would rather, I guess, would I rather be in the situation of a Washington Capitol fan right now?
It feels like there's less pressure in Washington.
Well.
Right?
Yeah.
And I guess part of that is because, you know, there is this carrot for Ovechkin. With Crosby, it's like, well, the only thing he cares about is winning another Stanley Cup. And I guess being in Pittsburgh. So I think the stakes are different, and that's maybe why it's easier to be in Washington. Mm.
All right, we got a big one tonight. Wednesday night hockey, Leafs and Capitals. We'll take a quick break on the other side. We're going to talk to Wendell Clark. Whew, we got lots to go through with Wendell. Then we will shift to our Leafs pregame show, which will be on Sportsnet 590 The Fan at 7 o'clock. Puck drop is at 7:30 tonight, so a little bit later. But we got lots to go through in our show. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back on The Fan pregame.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on The Fan pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590. The Fan ahead of Leafs and Capitals, 7:30 puck drop on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590. The Fan. We're going to talk to Wendell Clark in just a moment. Getting some very interesting Shohei Ohtani news, which we will sprinkle at the end of the show, but pretty significant in terms of his interpreter being fired from the Dodgers.
Drama, scandal.
For some significant gambling related issues. We will get to that. We will try to get it uncovered and as factually correct as possible because it's happening as we speak. Tonight, Brody will be scratched for Timmins. Reeves is out. He got poked in the eye in that fight. And Gregor is in. And we're still waiting for confirmation if it's Joseph Woll in net, but that is our potential starter for tonight. Lots to go through tonight. We got two major goal scorers on the ice tonight. We got Wendell Clark on the line, former Maple Leafs captain, of course, joining us. Wendell, appreciate your time tonight.
No, good to be here.
How are you feeling about Maple Leafs hockey?
Hey, well, it's all good. We're playing not too bad. There's been a couple of close games playing teams at the end of the year. It's great. It's everybody playing for something, whether it be Carolina, Washington's playing to get ahead. And it's good, tough hockey. It gets you ready for the playoffs. So it's good that we're using a lot of guys, actually.
Well, isn't that part of the problem, though, Wendell? This Maple Leafs team, it's like another March, right? Like, there's not really much to play for. Yeah, you want to get ready for the playoffs, but you kind of know where you're going to end up. And you mentioned Carolina. They're fighting for the Metropolitan Division title. Mm-hmm. Capitals fighting for their playoff lives. Like, is incentive an issue or is motivation an issue when you kind of just know where you are? Feels like that's been a problem for the Maple Leafs the last couple of years.
No, not at the professional level. We can judge from the outside all you want, but really they got to get ready to play that type of hockey. So whether you're playing Carolina or Washington or whoever it is you're playing as the game tightens up at the end of the season, come into March. And so we got to learn to play patient and not give up chances and learn the way it's going to be in the playoffs, because it's a little closer to playoff hockey in March than it is in December. So we have to use this as well to become a better hockey team, and also different guys getting in the lineup that you're going to need in the playoffs. We need all the guys. You know, you need eight defensemen, not six. You need extra guys because the playoffs is a grind if you're going to go a long way.
Yeah, and they're going to be using some extras tonight again with Brody scratched, Connor Timmins coming in, and Noah Gregor entering the lineup for Ryan Reeves. Of course, this season is different than it was last year, right? Because Kyle Dubas was in charge last year. Brad Treliving comes in this year and wants to make his mark on the team. And we can kind of see it. You know, the defense is a little bigger, a little tougher. What differences have you picked up on as Brad Treliving tries to make this Leafs team his Leafs team?
Well, I think, you know, it's hard, you know, to make major changes in today's game. But he's gradually adding some size to the back end, and they got to fit in. They're not going to be one game in and they're going to be great. It's going to take a month for the guys that we got to start feeling comfortable and get into a rhythm, and our guys get used to them. But we're adding size, hopefully, is what we've done on defense. And with that, over time, hopefully our goaltenders see less action in front of the net, because then our goalies will look better if we're playing tougher on defense. And I think, you know, our bottom two lines have to learn that they got to play and not be scored on. It's not so much whether we get third line and fourth line scoring as much as people think we need secondary scoring. That's not what we need. We need everybody play consistent and patient and hard hockey, making it hard on their team, because that's what playoffs hockey is UCL hard. In last year's playoffs, the other team plays against our best players. Well, we need our team playing against their best players as hard as our players get played against.
Is that what you see when you look at someone like a Florida or a Boston, who potentially either of them will be the Maple Leafs' first round opponent, a big physical team that plays really good, strong playoff hockey and doesn't really get pushed off pucks and competes hard every night?
Yeah, no, those two teams are—they're built to play. You know, well, Boston got upset last year because the regular season was too easy, and I predicted they were going to lose in the first round because they had no pushback all year.
Nice.
Everything just fell into place for them, and then come playoffs, they run into pushback. So they'll have learned from that. They are a little older, so that's one step against them. But they know, Boston knows how to play come playoff time. And Florida, definitely, after going through it last year and going a long way. And you play hard. Guys are going to sit on you 5 seconds longer. So the defensive guy on their team is going to sit on our best player 5 seconds longer after he hits him. So it makes our best player work 5 seconds harder to get away from him, get him off, because there is no holding. There is no hitting harder penalties in the playoffs like there is in the regular season. And so our guys have to learn to play against it, but we also have to do that to the other team. It's getting done to us. We have to do it to the other team as well to make it harder for them. It's not about winning the one period. It's about winning the seven-game series.
So the Maple Leafs kind of experiencing life without Mitch Marner right now as he deals with a high ankle sprain. Of course, the partnership with Austin Matthews is immensely important. Mitch Marner is immensely important to the Toronto Maple Leafs, but does it kind of underscore it a little bit more when he's not in the lineup, what Mitch Marner gives to this team?
Yeah, but it's also, Mitch has had trouble in the last couple of playoffs getting points. So it also, you have to learn to be able to play without it, because he does get shut down in the playoffs. And he plays a lot of tough minutes. So it's great that our team's playing without him to understand what it's like come playoff time. And it's also great timing for Mitch's injury right now. I don't know how bad it is. I'm hoping it's not bad at all. But he's getting a two-week body rest here. This is something where he can recharge his batteries. Mitch is 165 pounds. So it's a great time to be getting healthier and being stronger and being well-rested for the playoffs. Mitch doesn't need 100 points to end the regular season. We need Mitch to be totally healthy and rested. And rested is the key word when you're a smaller player.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of major points down the stretch here, is having good habits and being healthy. And Maple Leafs might not be fighting for a playoff spot, but they might be fighting for that in general. Talking to Wendell Clark, of course, of former Maple Leafs captain. I want to ask you about Austin Matthews, because every year he gets closer to breaking more and more Maple Leafs history book records, and he does it, I guess, on a continuous basis. He might be closest to 70 goals here in this league, and he might just get it. What do you love most about watching Austin Matthews and his play as he continues to develop as one of the best Maple Leafs possibly of all time?
Well, no, I'm getting more and more impressed all the time with how Austin plays. From how he started as a rookie, he's the same size guy, but he's got more mature and stronger. You see how much he cares when teammates scores or has a great play. He's as happy as, he reminds me of Matt, he's as happy as when a teammate gets a goal that hasn't scored in a while or something. So he's very happy for his teammates. But really himself, he's a big, strong guy. He's hard to move off the puck. He scores from every area now, not just, you know, one or two different areas is where he scores from. He is an all, you know, in front of the net, screening or off to the side or carrying it from the left to the right. He does it in all areas now, and that's very hard to check. And so he's made himself a better and better player every year. So it's great on his maturity and also his will to be a good player.
What's the vibe like in the alumni box when there's a Domi in the alumni box and a Domi on the ice at Scotiabank Arena?
We haven't seen the Domi in the alumni box. We've got to get him over there. Wow. He's hiding from us.
He is laying low. You think he'd lay this low?
He's in the building. He's just not in the box with us that much.
Okay.
But, no, it's always good when you see a father-son tandem there. It's great when Ty's in the building and around, and it's great when his son's doing well playing. It's, you know, he grew up watching his dad in the city, so it's nothing but great for us alumni to see the family, not just one, but the family in the building having fun. And it's always good to see both guys having fun in the building.
Yeah, he's already become a fan favorite, Max, and he looks the part, right? He's got missing half his teeth, and he plays really aggressive, so he's definitely got some of Ty's genes. I want to ask you. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, sorry. No, he doesn't, and you know he can move up and down the lineup, play different positions, and he's going to be a big proponent come playoff time. Your third and fourth lines are going to do things to make your team win. He can play through traffic because he's not a tall guy, but he's a stocky fella that can play through traffic. He can create havoc against the other team. And as long as he's playing in those dirty areas, he's going to see a lot of good ice time. I think we've seen it last year in the playoffs, how well he played. And so that's I think his importance will get even bigger as we get closer in the playoffs.
Yeah, Maple Leafs need to get some depth scoring to produce at big moments, and it could just be Max Domi getting a very important playoff goal. I think the Scotiabank Arena would be pretty loud for that.
It would be.
I saw on ESPN a couple of days ago that they were ranking NHL rivalries, and they put Boston and the Maple Leafs as the fifth best NHL rivalry. Did you feel that it was Boston that was the biggest rival for the Leafs when you were playing? Are they missing maybe Montreal or another opponent there? Because fifth is pretty high for a full-time NHL rivalries.
Well, probably because it's been the playoffs there, mm-hmm. a couple times in the playoffs, so that's turned into a rivalry. In my time, we didn't play Boston other than twice a year, so mm-hmm. it was tough to get the rivalries going. You need to have those playoff battles where the fans hate each other and the fans hate the visiting team. And so in my time, it would have been Detroit, and we play them every year in the playoffs, and St. Louis and Chicago, and then you always have the Montreal's always a rivalry from the original six, just the two big Canadian teams. That have been forever. And then just after me, you know, there would have been the Ottawa-Toronto rivalry because of four times meeting in the playoffs in a row there. So, and then there was Philly and Toronto, and then Boston's had the upper hand on us lately in the last couple times they've played. And heck, if we meet Florida, it could be Florida, the new rivalry.
Yeah, it's whatever way the wind is blowing, it seems. We're talking to the former Maple Leafs captain, Wendell Clark. The latest saga in the NHL, Wendell, is John Tortorella benching captain of the Philadelphia Flyers, Sean Couturier. You've been a captain of the Maple Leafs. You've had that captain-coach relationship. When you saw that, because you have a different perspective, right? Like, a coach, yeah, they got to dole out some punishment every now and then. There's got to be some disciplinary action every now and then. But when it extends to the captain, does it kind of muddy up the waters when a coach and captain are supposed to work and act in lockstep?
I don't know if they've ever acted in lockstep. That's only for everybody outside the team.
Mm-hmm.
No, everybody knows how Torch coaches and how he handles his team, and his team knows how he handles them. They know him better than anybody. And he's shocking on. It's the time of the year. They got upset the time before playing Toronto, and maybe he hasn't been happy, and he's doing the shock and awe, the old school, I'll wake everybody up, and then everybody will be upset and not know what's going on. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but that's who Torts is. As much as everybody thinks that coaches have changed over time, they really don't lose their stripes. They do what they think they have to do to win. And he's obviously done pretty well at it because he's won for a couple decades now coaching. So that's his stripes. He does that to get the attention of his players, and not just the players that he's doing it to, but the players that are playing. And it obviously worked. They came out, played hard, and upset us for a win. So you can't say what he did was wrong. He's thinking about the team winning. His job isn't to think about one guy. His job is to think about how does the team win. And it may work, or it may work that he gets fired at the end of the year. But he's got to do what he thinks in his own mind. He's the coach, and we've seen this out of Torts many times. And he's just trying to get reaction out of his players.
I've got one last one for you, Wendell. We appreciate your time tonight. Last week, we were talking about NHL expansion. Of course, that's something that the league keeps thinking of. And we asked our listeners to text in where they would want an NHL team. And I swear, there must have been 250 text messages about Saskatchewan. And you're a good Sask boy. So obviously, we got to ask you, that, I guess, fan base that's itching for a team, or just the love of hockey in Saskatchewan, why it would be, you know, maybe something down the road that the NHL could explore?
Well, I think you'd get the 18,000 fans every game. Yeah. That's a given.
That's all you need.
The whole province.
But it's they do it for the Rough Riders. It's all green. 1 million people for the Riders, for the CFL team. But it's something that's probably not a big enough population, mm-hmm. when you're trying to grow the game and make it bigger and bigger all the time. It's the New York cities against the next major market. It's not so much small market teams have always had a little tougher time, as you've seen in Winnipeg right now, as tough, you know, and their team's a good team and they're having trouble selling out the building. So it takes a lot of people to buy expensive tickets for 40 home games every year. It's and so the bigger the markets and the stronger the markets, the stronger the game is. So we'd all love it, us being a Saskatchewan boy, we'd love to see it out there, but I just don't think it's a big enough market.
I'm going to Wolseley, Saskatchewan, I believe next week for Kraft Hockeyville. You got to let me know about that tiny little hamlet. Less than 1,000 people apparently live there, but I will be in that town. What do I need to know?
Hey, small town, the best there is. They all live and breathe hockey in Saskatchewan. You're going to go into a small town where the hockey rink and the curling rink, if you're looking for somebody, go to those two areas, and any given weekend you'll find out the answers you need to know about the town. But a great little sports town that's doing a great job.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, we might have lost Wendell there. Perfect timing to do it. Appreciate it, Wendell, for coming on, talking about little hamlet of Wolseley or Wolseley. Oh, Wendell, we can still hear you, maybe?
Yeah, I can still hear you.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah, we lost just the end of that one, but you're just talking about how that's a great little hamlet, a great little hockey town, and if I need to find anyone, go to the rink or the curling rink.
That's it. You'll find them.
Appreciate That's it, awesome. Wendell. I think we're cutting out, but thanks so much for your time tonight. Really great to catch up and talk about the Maple Leafs, and hopefully we can do this down the road.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much. That's Wendell Clark, former Maple Leafs captain, good old Sask boy. And I want to say one thing that I loved about that interview, how he uses we in all of his answers. We need this. We need to get this. We need the boys this. He's like, he's still a part of the blue and white.
And like, you don't have to wear the C to earn that distinction where you can continue to say we. Like, any alumni can go that route, I think. But there's no question about it when you're the former captain of the Maple Leafs. Like, you can walk into that dressing room at any time. And I'm sure Wendell, when he's not hanging out in the alumni box, not with Didomi, which is interesting, right?
Like, I've seen a lot of video, a lot. I've seen, let's say, 4 hockey games that Didomi were at this year. And each time it's been a photo of him in the stands with one of those hats.
He's keeping a low profile for sure.
What are those hats called? Mike has one. It's like a chapeau.
It's like the
paperboy hat.
Piggy blind paperboy.
Yeah, Didomi was wearing it all the.
He's trying to keep a low profile.
But I mean, you're Didomi.
Exactly.
People know who you are with a hat or not.
Yeah,
you got a presence about you. You know, like, it's Didomi.
I mean, if he wanted to hide, he could hide in the press box or in the alumni box.
He doesn't want all his former teammates like grilling about Max. Like, get Max what's going on with Max?
Part of it.
It'd be fun. It'd be really fun.
If he hasn't been on Kipper and Bourne yet, I think it means, he's keeping the low profile, letting Max do his thing.
I love it. That was Wendell Clark. Great interview. We're going to have Leafs and Capitals up at 7:30 on Sportsnet. And then after we take a break here for 7 o'clock, we'll move just to Sportsnet 590 The Fan for our Leafs pregame show. Do you want to quickly touch on our Shohei news?
Because, let's do it. There's a lot to unpack here.
Okay, so... Thanks to producer Mike for throwing this in the doc for us, because we haven't actually had a chance to read it. It's happening live. But what we know for sure about Shohei Ohtani is that his interpreter has been fired. Ipe.
We're going with Ipe. We're not 100% sure, but Ipe. His interpreter fired by the Dodgers today.
It involves $4.5 million in wire transfers. Initially, a spokesman for Ohtani told ESPN that Ohtani had transferred the funds to cover his interpreter's debt.
Gambling debt.
So there are statements from lawyers, et cetera, but this is a very significant thing that Shohei's actual, like, close friend and interpreter is no longer with him. We wanted to look into the clause, because we do remember when Shohei signed his crazy deal. Mm-hmm. One of the clauses was that, he could opt out if somebody was fired. And I thought it was the interpreter, but it seems like it's not the interpreter.
Hmm.
We got to get to the bottom of that.
Yeah, we got to get. It's fascinating though, because this is not like completely new. Like, there are rumblings about, like, people were talking about a potential issue. I believe the interpreter was in the dugout in Korea when the MLB started their season with the Dodgers.
But
and
he's
Padres.
There right now.
He's there right now.
So I'm just scanning through our notes here, but federal investigators examining the operation run by Southern California bookmaker. The wire transfer payments were sent from Ohtani's account to an associate of the bookmaker. ESPN had reviewed bank information showing Ohtani's name on two $500,000 payments sent last September and October. While sports betting is legal in nearly 40 states, it remains illegal in California.
Illegal in California. So it would be not just, hey, we can't have you here anymore. We're talking about multi-layered criminal activity if you are both gambling and not stealing money from Shohei Ohtani, because I guess Ohtani did know about it, according to, I guess, some wire transfer information or the bits and pieces of information we have. But it's pretty interesting, to say the least. I think there's going to be a lot more to come out of this. I will say, like, he's not short on cash, Shohei Ohtani, of course. Like, anyone losing $4.5 million is not ideal. But this is a guy who did sign a massive contract, huge contract, close to $1 billion, right? It was in the multi-hundreds of millions with the LA Dodgers just this offseason. But he deferred a lot of that money. What, is he only making a couple $1 million per season with the Dodgers? And this is like a kind of a tax evasion thing.
He was
thing.
Making
and
like Ryan Altapia money.
Yeah. Like which
it's,
is...
It's just it's absurd. So I just want to follow up one thing there. The opt-out clause that we thought had to do with the interpreter doesn't. It has to do with Dodgers president of baseball operations, sorry, Andrew Friedman, and team owner Mark Walter. If one of those two are not in their position during the next 10 years, then Ohtani can opt out.
Okay.
So that would also be pretty significant. If, that, you know, team owner and
that gives the interpreter a lot of power.
Yeah.
If he was...
Well, they are best friends. Like, they are...
And that's another layer to it. It's not just an employee. This is...
That's your buddy.
Two guys are pretty tight.
His longtime interpreter.
Okay. And it's interesting because...
It's all
like,
over the internet,
Shohei's
folks.
Got the squeaky clean image, right? Like, ultra squeaky clean Shohei Ohtani. This guy does nothing wrong. He does nothing. He just sleeps and plays baseball. And now he's sort of wrapped up into something that I don't think anyone would ever really have thought of.
So Ben Verlander, who we've talked to before, has a couple pieces of information. I'm just going to read this one. Apparently, his interpreter, Ipe, addressed the Dodgers clubhouse after the game last night. Quote, a Dodgers spokesperson said that he addressed the clubhouse after the game, telling them a story was coming out that it was all his fault, saying he has a gambling addiction. So I guess they knew this was coming, obviously. And then today, boom, here you go. Lots of information up online about this, but it's pretty significant when it's the most known baseball player in the world, and it's messy.
And now we will awkwardly transition into best bets for tonight.
Oh.
Anyway. Play responsibly.
So I'll just tell you about some things that are happening in the sports world that might pique your interest. Toronto, PWHL, Toronto, look at that beaut. Oh my, we got a pan? We've never had a pan before.
Cinematography.
That is stunning. Look at that. PWHL Toronto is going for 11 straight wins tonight against Boston. It is just unbelievable what they've been doing. Obviously, no record of this length has ever happened in the PWHL, duh. But there's no professional hockey or sports, any league right now with an 11-game win streak. So Toronto going for 11 straight tonight versus Boston. I'm making a Toronto parlay for my pick. I'm picking the hometown teams, the Leafs and P-Dub Toronto, to win tonight just on the money line. That's my best bet tonight. A bit of a homer, but strike while you can.
Okay, I'll go to L.A. to make a bet, the state of California.
You're not allowed to bet in California.
Kings hosting the Wild tonight. David Rittich in net for the L.A. Kings. Marc-Andre Fleury in net for the Minnesota Wild. I feel like it would be irresponsible. Well, maybe it would be responsible not to. Irresponsible, though, not to bet the over 5.5 minus 115 in this game. Like, those are second and third string goaltenders in the NHL nowadays, at least by, you know, maybe proper slotting, and we're getting an over of 5.5. So both these two teams played last night, which means it could be a little sloppier the night after, second night of a back-to-back. So I think the over in the Kings and Wild makes a lot of sense. And also, the Raptors host the Sacramento Kings tonight.
Ooh.
When a good team comes through Toronto and it's like a double-digit favorite, I'm just kind of go with the double digits. I like the Kings tonight, but I'm going to parlay it with Malik Monk, 25 plus points. Malik Monk is the heavy favorite to win Sixth Man of the Year, kind of under the radar. I mean, not like Sixth Man's the biggest thing in the world, but Malik Monk is trying to pad his stats. So if he gets into a game against second units for the Toronto Raptors right now, we're not exactly murderer's row. I think Malik Monk is going to try to put up a good stat line. So 25 plus points plus the Kings winning by margin plus 625.
All right. I got the Toronto parlay. You've got a bunch of random stuff. Quick tidbit on the PWHL, which you mentioned earlier. Today, sold out the Bell Center for the game between Toronto and Montreal, which will be on April 20th. Bell Center is the largest NHL arena. They sold out 21,302 seats in less than 30 minutes. Pretty unbelievable, but you got to keep believing it because they just keep setting the bar and jumping right over it.
And you'll be there?
I will be there. Bon voyage. We'll take a quick break on the other side. We'll be back on Sportsnet 590 The Fan with our Leafs pregame show. Have a good night, everyone.